As you may have noted earlier, my voice is not very strong today, so I'm not sure how long I'll last. It's getting worse as the day goes on. I would like to share with you just a few thoughts concerning anger. It's something we visit from time to time. It's an important aspect of our discipleship to understand how dangerous anger is, but to understand its nature, the fact that it legitimately is an emotion that we feel, each of us, and that God does not necessarily not want us to feel. There are times in which it is appropriate. We want to discuss that a little bit. And so the premise of the lesson today can be well stated in the text of Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26, which tells us to be angry and do not sin, and do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. And so I guess the first stipulation we need to make in our lesson this morning is that it is not sinful to be angry, not inherently so. And thus, when the Apostle Paul says, be angry but don't sin, understand first, it's not a command to be angry. It's just not to sin when you're angry. And that's what is indicated by the text here. And so we want to talk a little bit about anger and recognize that, first of all, God gets angry. We need to acknowledge that that is indeed true, and that sin, ungodliness, disobedience on our part is something which angers God. His is a righteous anger. He is not sinning when he gets angry. There's nothing irresponsible or inappropriate about his anger, and there are numerous times, especially as we get into the Old Testament, where we find how Israel angered the Lord with their rebellion, with their idolatry, with their sinfulness as a nation, that is expressed very clearly and obviously in Scripture so as to not be able in any way to dismiss the truth. Let me give you a couple of examples. Looking at the King James Version of the Bible, the phrase anger of the Lord is found actually 32 different times. And then there is another phrase, the wrath of the Lord. Now we'll try to make somewhat a distinguishing comment or two about the difference between anger and wrath, because they're not exactly the same. But the phrase wrath of the Lord is used 13 times in the King James Version of the Bible. And so we will go so far as to say that God even reacted wrathfully when he was angered by the disobedience and immorality and idolatry of both the Israelites, the nations that surround them, the entirety of the world at certain times. And that wrath was appropriate. But understand this, it was appropriate for God. I don't know that we can argue quite as successfully it's all right for us to be wrathful. The response of wrath is something that is a very dangerous one for us to consider, that we'll discuss a little bit in our discussion of anger. But I want to note that there were a number of times in the New Testament where Jesus himself reacted in anger. Now we have referred to the text of Mark 3 and verses 1 through 5, which was read in your hearing just a few moments ago. I want you to note that as a result of the unwillingness of the Pharisees to answer his question, knowing their hearts, knowing that even as he healed a man on the Sabbath day, they sought to accuse him, and they were his opponents, we are told in verse 5 that when he looked around at them with anger, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, stretch out your hand, and as he stretched it out, his hand was restored. So Jesus reacted with anger. He looked upon them with anger. There, of course, are other instances. The one that comes to mind, is when he drove out the money changers in the temple, in his visit to the temple in Jerusalem, because they had in their thievery disappointed and angered him. His indignation was righteous, but his wrath was real as he overturned the tables of the money changers and drove out the sinners and the cattle and such with whips. And so he acted in upon his anger on that occasion in a righteous way. He cleansed his father's temple of such indignities and sinfulness. And so there is that manifestation. We want to note that first, the manifestation of Jesus' anger. And legitimate anger may be expressed from time to time on our part as well. And we want to note that. Especially, for example, I went a little bit too quickly, so let me backspace just a moment. And let me note that I've had an opportunity for some time to worship and to work with those who served as elders, and know firsthand in my interaction with the elders how that sin angered them. But you would not see that in your interaction with those men because of the control that they had. One of the things that we are stated as a, or are stated as a, as qualifications for the elders is that they must be slow to anger. Slow to anger. And I've mentioned PA as a good example of this. A number of times I looked at specific instance when he was angered as a result of error that was being taught, rebellion that was being exhibited. And that anger was obvious. It was something you could see in the flash of his eyes and the set of his mouth, but you didn't hear it in the raising of his voice, and you did not hear it in his treatment of that individual who was causing that anger, and that was because he was slow to anger. I want you to note, first of all, as we acknowledge this, that it is something that is difficult for us to control, but it is possible for us to control our anger. In fact, we are to control our anger. That's one of the things that's indicated by this lesson in the passages that we're going to examine. And it may not be easy for us to do it. It may not be as easy for some of us as for others. But what is not appropriate is for us to exhibit anger, and when confronted with our transgression and our exhibition of anger, not the anger itself, but our exhibition of that anger, in other words, we have done something awry, something we should not have done, to simply say, well, that's just who I am. Or I'm just that kind of a person, or that's just my personality, or I can't help myself, because those things are not true. We need to be careful with regard to our anger that we do not express it in illegitimate ways. Now, in stating that, and recognizing that that is the case, I do want to, in that emphasis of the fact that anger is sometimes legitimate, I want to spend the rest of our time looking at the sinful expressions of anger that we might find a reference to in Scripture, that we might avoid that sin in our own lives. And so what I want to emphasize is that while anger itself is not intrinsically evil, it is dangerous because of the evils that might come from that. It may not in itself be sinful. God has created us with passion. He has created with emotions. And again, it is appropriate for some time for us to have emotions of anger in certain circumstances. But the Lord continually warns us about sinful expressions of that anger. When he tells us, for example, he says, be angry and do not sin, as we indicated there in Ephesians. So let's talk, first of all, about dangers of being angry. The first one is what we alluded to just a few moments ago, and that is being quick to be angry. You've heard it as flying off the handle. When a person gets angry very easily, if he does not have self-control, as a result of that, he will often do things that are inappropriate. The book of Proverbs has much to say on this particular matter of the danger of being quick-tempered. For example, in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 17 of the text, we are told that a quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. A quick-tempered man acts foolishly. So I want you just to think about, for example, the the cautions that we are given. If you become angry before you speak, count to 10. Sometimes I have to count to 20 or 30 or 100 if I am angry. But there is that expression, because it is possible if we fly off the handle, if we are quick-tempered, that we may say something that is inappropriate or do something that is inappropriate, because it indicates a lack of control. I think perhaps that would be something for us to consider. When we talk about the anger of God, understand it is a controlled anger. The wrath of God is a controlled wrath. God does not let things that are of no consequence make him angry. God has control over his emotions. We are told that he is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but all come to repentance. When you look at the example of Israel, time and again, they rebelled against him. He chastised them. They did it again. They did it again. They did it again. And finally, they were judged. Even in the flood, in the first destruction of the world by water, where Noah and eight souls total were saved, we find that God bore long with man until every intent in their hearts was evil continually, when he decided that it was time for him to punish them and to destroy the world by water. But it was a control. God's not out of control. And we who are made in the image of God should not be out of control either. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 29, we are told that he who is slow to wrath has great understanding. Are you provoked? Yes, you're provoked. Let's just take a simple illustration. Driving on the highway, you've all heard of road rage. There are numerous times in my driving to where I've been cut off in traffic, or someone has done something that was foolish or something that was unexpected, and I flashed anger. You've done that as well, haven't you? What in the world are they doing? Why don't people pay attention to what they're doing? Now, I've done it myself a couple of times, unfortunately. But there is that flash of anger. But you realize that there are individuals, well, they'll tailgate the guy for the next half mile just to show them their anger, or they'll create an obscene gesture as they pass them on by, or they'll get out of their car if they come to a red light and they want to fight. There are a lot of things that happen. Indicates that road rage is something that hits people who do not have control of their emotions. And so we need to recognize the need for control and the fact that we are to be slow to wrath. And that doesn't mean that there will not be that flash. There does not that mean that there will not be that provocation. It does not mean that we may not set our teeth and we may not grimace and our blood pressure may elevate just a little bit, but you don't have to act upon it. You can be slow to get angry, because we're told that he who is impulsive, well, he exalts folly. He does foolish things. In Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 18, we're told that a wrathful man stirs up strife, but the one who is slow to anger, he allays contention. So you realize that most of the time, if you show the road rage, you yell and scream, you get out of your car and you bang on the window that you want to fight, chances are the person that you bang the window on, they're going to want to fight in return because they got angry at you. And they may be bigger than you are or a better fighter than you are, and you need to be careful about that as well. But a person who's slow to wrath, who lets it go, who's able to control himself, well, that person allays, puts aside, sets aside contention between individuals. You've heard again, old bromide, that it takes two to fight. And there is a lot of truth to that. Even with regard to domestic arguments and such, is if you have two that are equally willing at all times to engage in the anger and engage in the argumentation, then that particular relationship is going to be in danger, isn't it? Because things will be said that should not be said, and it can cause hurts that are not easily salved, and as a result of that, a person can lose that relationship. We need to be careful in how we treat one another. The second point that I want to note is talking about the lack of control, because it can exhibit itself in so many different ways. In Proverbs 16, we are told of the importance to rule your spirit, to control it. And we're told in James, you remember, that the tongue is iniquitous, that it is poisonous, that it is very, very difficult to control. It's referred to as a fire of iniquity. And we're told that we cannot tame the tongue. You know, that in the indication that James is saying, not saying that we can't control the tongue, he's saying we can't tame it. You know what a tame dog is? I've come into people's houses and the dog's jumping all over you and trying to lick your face, and I'm allergic to dogs, so it's not as fun a thing for me, but they're doing all this, and the person says, well, don't worry, they're just friendly. And the fact is that you can let a pet dog loose and they're tame and they're not going to bite someone, even if they don't know them. They have been trained. They are just friendly, but not a lion. You talk about a lion tamer. They're not taming lions. Lion trainer might be a better adjective to describe it. But they've got their whip in there, and they certainly do not turn their backs on those lions or on those tigers, because they recognize how dangerous it is. They may can control them, but they can't tame them. And that's what we're talking about with regard to anger. You control it. If you say, I really struggle with the fact that I do have that flash often, that provocation does set me off. And that's true with each and every one of us, some to a greater extent of others. Some have more difficulty because they are quick to flash, where others may not be. But the question is, do you control it? Because one who is able to control his anger, rule his spirit. We're told that he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. The control of anger is something that is very, very special. And it's something that should be characteristic of God's people. We're told in Proverbs chapter 25 and 28, if we give the contrast, that the one who does not rule his spirit, he has no rule over his spirit, he's like a city that is broken down without walls. Isn't anger destructive? We know that anger is destructive if it is exhibited in destructive ways. And there are ways that that can be. Now, if you get angry at something, you say, okay, I'm going to resolve as a result of that anger to better myself. I'm going to use that anger that I felt to do better or to change something in my life. You can redirect that kind of emotion that you have to increase your standing with God and to do the things that are needful. But so often that's not the way anger exhibits itself. You get angry and you shout. You've seen the cartoon where the boss yells at the husband. The husband gets mad, and when he gets home, he yells at the wife, and the wife gets angry, and she yells at the kid, and the kid gets mad and kicks the dog, and the dog chases the cat, and the cat eats the mouse. Poor old mouse. It's just that transgression, that line that continues going down from one to another. You can break that yourself if you control your anger. We're told in James chapter 1 and verse 19 and verse 20, it says, let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath, because the wrath of men does not produce the righteousness of God. And so we do get that word wrath there. And I do want to remind you that God has a right from time to time to act upon his anger as a just God, and as his preeminent place in the universe gives him that position. We're going to talk about that with regard to vengeance in just a few moments. The fact is, it is often inappropriate for us to react in our anger, because in doing that, we very seldom ever do something that is good, something that is proper. Instead, we will be caught in sin. And so anger is not the problem. Uncontrolled anger is the problem, which gets us to our third and final point that we alluded to, and that is vengeful anger. Vengeful anger. Now, what is meant by that? Well, I think we need to go back to Ephesians 4, verse 26, which says, do not sin when you're angry. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath or give place to the devil. Say, now I'm mad, now I'm angry, and I'm going to do something about it. Okay? So how do people do that? Well, one of the ways is they hang on to that anger, do they not? So brother so-and-so says, so-and-so made me angry. I go to bed, go to sleep, wake up the next morning, I'm still angry at brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so, because I haven't let it go. In a day or two, it may be weeks that I won't speak to them in service, at worship services, or I'm not going to have anything to do with them. They're no longer my friend. I'm not going to involve myself with them because I'm holding on to my anger. It's called holding a grudge is what it is. And that is completely and totally inappropriate for us to do so. That is giving place to the devil is what that's doing. So I'm angry, yes, I've got that flash of emotion, a legitimate emotion, but it's going to cause me to do things that God does not want me to do. To treat my brethren or treat my family or treat my fellow man without love. Of forgetting that golden rule that I would have, I would do unto others what I would have them do unto me. Instead, I'm going to get them because they made me mad. It's just not appropriate. It's just not right for us to do that. And so I want to leave you with a text from Romans 12, which gives us a good description of how we are to treat one another. And this is not specifically having referenced anger, although it's involved in this text, but it is our response, even despite or through any anger, any provocation, any sin that is committed against us. I want you to listen to what the Apostle Paul has to say in verse 18. He says, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Now, that's a command of God. That's what God expects of us. You won't always be at peace with men, will you? But don't you dare be the one that is responsible for divisiveness. Don't you be the one that is responsible for the strife, the problems in the relationship, the dissolution of what is good. It should not be your fault. You should be striving for unity, for love. And if another individual is not willing to assist you in that, it may be that your relationship may not be at peace as God intends it to be, but that's not your fault. Not if you're doing everything you can. But that's the question. Are you doing everything that you can? And so, to establish how this is done, the Apostle Paul continues in verse 19 by saying, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. Have you ever tried to do that? I mean, we're all supposed to do it, but I'm thinking of a specific situation where someone has made you angry and you want to go and you want to tell them you're angry, you want to get back at them, you want to cause the ruckus and everything, and instead you just let it go. The phrase water off a duck's back is something that comes to mind with regard to that illustration. And I'm not saying that we don't deal with sin. I recognize that that is it from time to time, but so often we have such lack of control with regard to our passions that if we perceive a slight, it elicits anger in us that will cause us, being uncontrolled, to act out on that anger. And what the Apostle Paul says, don't do that. Give place to wrath. And remember this, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. The Lord has the place to where he can exercise vengeance. It's not our place to do so. Instead, we're to try to live peaceably with all men. That's something for us to remember from time to time, because I know as well as you do that we have problems with our tongue. We talk about it every once in a while, but everybody has a problem with anger. And so it's something for us to keep in mind. So this is what we are to do in verse 20 of the text. If your enemy is hungry, well, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Don't be overcome by evil. That's what's acting out upon your anger is a part of that. It's being overcome by the evil. The anger, I don't give place to that wrath that I'm feeling. I don't strive to live peaceably. I act out on that anger and it causes destruction to my own soul. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And that's something for us all to be mindful of. We're going to offer an invitation at this time, not knowing the hearts of any who are here today. Appreciate you bearing with me with my hoarseness. If there is anything that we can do to assist you in your striving to serve God so that you might do so acceptably, if we can help you control your anger, if we can work with you to help in that, to help you grow spiritually so that you're better in control of your passions and your ability to resist temptation, then we'll assist you in any way we can. If you have a need to respond to the gospel, we will help you in responding to the gospel. The invitation is extended to all. If there is anyone here who needs to respond at this time, please do so. While together we stand, while we sing the song selected.